put on in partnership with another organization called Common Grace, which a few of you here might know quite a bit about from the looks of things. And to kind of welcome you on behalf of Common Grace and to let you know a little bit about what Common Grace is doing in relation to the domestic violence space, it's my pleasure to welcome up Nat Williams, who I used to know by a different name, that's why I'm struggling, who will then introduce our speaker for this evening. So please welcome up Nat.
It's lovely to be able to welcome you all here and to be partnering with Peace Talks. I've been asked to just share very briefly about Common Grace. What is Common Grace? It's a Christian action platform in sort of the same model as your GetUp or Avaaz, if you're familiar with those models, that is creating this kind of collective Christian voice around key social justice issues. Common Grace has been going, I think, since 2014. Is that right? How did it come about? I believe that quite a well-known non-Christian activist approached a group of Christians and said, look, we've got this political space, this public sphere that is very myopic, very self-centred. We have these incredibly difficult issues that need to be engaged with, a diabolical refugee and offshore processing system, total virtual inaction on climate change, and where are the Christians? And so Common Grace was born. I think from the last numbers, we've got about 18,000 members in 23,000 now, 23,000 in our network, which is very exciting, from a really wide range of faith communities and church traditions. Common Grace runs a number of social justice campaigns, completely staffed by volunteers, on refugees, climate change, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander justice, gambling reform, and now the domestic and family violence campaign, of which I am a part. I think that's probably enough about Common Grace. A little bit about our team. So, yes, I'm a part of the domestic and family violence campaign team, my background is that I work in strategic policy as a senior officer for the New South Wales Government in the Department of Family and Community Services. We have a variety of members in our team, ranging from clergy to academics to practitioners to campaigners. It's getting to be quite a large team, actually. And we've got a lot of exciting projects underway. Why is Common Grace interested in this topic, and why should the church be interested in domestic and family violence, which is the question, really? I think in my lifetime, it's really been a largely silent issue for the church, for the wider community, really. Family violence has not been talked about until very recently. We've had, of course, Rosie Batty as Australian of the Year and the recent Victorian Royal Commission on Family Violence. So it's really exploded onto the public agenda. Incredible opportunity for people to become more aware about the issues, to take action, to respond, to identify family violence in our communities. And it really puzzles me as to why it's taken this long. Thinking through it, you know, community attitudes, huge part of it. Another issue is that family violence is a really wicked problem in the sense that it's very resistant to kind of straightforward linear policy solutions. But the statistics are really chilling. So we know that at least one woman dies each week from domestic violence. One woman is hospitalised every 3 hours in Australia. And we have been asked why we're not focusing on male victims as well, of which there are certainly male victims of family violence. And we would say that Common Grace is absolutely opposed to all forms of abuse and violence, but the statistics are really clear. The ABS tells us that 85% of all domestic violence victims are women. And the kind of violence that women experience is much more sustained and serious and prolonged and produces much worse outcomes over the long term. So, you know, we agree with our Prime Minister, who recently called it a national epidemic, and that's why Common Grace is so passionate about this issue. Just really briefly, you may not be aware, but the Royal Commission in Victoria handed down their report. There were 127 recommendations, and three of those recommendations focused on religious communities, religious and faith communities, acknowledging that churches in particular have sometimes been very good at responding to family violence, but in many cases, due to practices and doctrines, have responded quite poorly to victims and perpetrators. So we are very interested in those recommendations, and the Commission has identified that churches have a wonderful opportunity and a vital opportunity to identify and assist families who are affected by domestic violence. And so Common Grace is working on some projects to support the church to do that better. And I think that's probably enough. It's probably time to hand over to Kylie Pidgeon, who I'm going to introduce now. I understand that Kylie is a psychologist who works with both perpetrators and survivors. And some of you might have actually read her excellent piece in the Fixing Her Eyes blog recently on the dynamic between domestic violence and the church's complementarian relationship theology, which I found it was an absolutely fascinating article. I guess we're going to hear a little bit more about that tonight, and I'm really looking forward to this facilitated, I guess, session. So over to you, Kylie.
Thanks, Matt. How's that microphone? Any good? Lovely. Nice to meet you all. I'm Kylie. Can you tell me all your names? Ready? Go. Thanks. Nice to meet you. We're going to talk about the church and family violence. This can be potentially really confronting. So I'll just say up front, if you're not feeling okay, if you're feeling sick, if you're feeling overwhelmed, then please take care of yourself. Take a break, grab a friend and go and chat about something, and I'll be available afterwards if you want to debrief. It happens a lot that people start to feel unwell or overwhelmed in the session, so please take care of yourselves. Is there anything that anyone would want to let me know before we start? I'm not just going to lecture, we're going to be doing this together. So is there any burning questions that you want me to answer or anything in particular that you've come to hear? Go ahead. Yeah. I don't know a lot about that. I mean, I'm happy to learn from you. So teach us when the opportunity comes. I only know a little bit about Indigenous kind of differences with family violence. Feel free to ask questions along the way. So love shouldn't hurt. Check out that picture. Gross, hey. What does it tell you? Looks like The Bachelor, a little bit, kind of glamorized, with a difference. Pain, yeah, mixture of love and pain. And that's what family violence is about. It's never just complete violence, someone's totally evil and there's nothing good about them. It's hardly ever like that. It's always a mixture of love and good relationship with bad relationship. I want to dedicate tonight, to all who have lost their lives to family violence, to all of those who will lose their lives or their minds in days to come, to all who are working towards the end of gender inequality and violence against women, to all the women and children who have been set free, praise the Lord, and to all the men who relate to their families in safe, loving and protective, respectful and protective ways, for God the loving Father, full of peace and love. So what are we talking about? Globally, 1 in 3 women experience partner violence. Think about how many friends you've got. It's probably more than 3. 1 in 3 will experience partner violence. Like's already been mentioned, one woman is killed every week in Australia. I think it's slightly above 1 a week at the moment. 7 in 10 women who are murdered in Australia are victims of family violence. So family violence kills more women than anything else. I heard the other day too that women are most likely to be harmed in their homes. Women are safer in a dark alley than they are in their homes. Frightening, hey? Reports of family violence are going up. I expect that's a mixture of reports are going up as well as incidents going up. I don't think just incidents is climbing that much, but I think people are starting to report more. children are present in one out of every three family violence situations. There's an interesting one. I was working with a family once where mum, dad and a two-year-old were in the room and dad stood up and shouted at mum and the two-year-old started crying and dad stormed out and mum and I were shaken. And I thought I better just check and see what the mandatory reporter guide, you know, the decision tree that you have to fill in if you're a mandatory reporter. I said, I better just check what that comes out as. And I ran through it and that came up as an immediate report to facts. He just shouted a couple of words and then stormed out of the room, and facts wanted to know about that, to look after that two-year-old. Isn't that amazing? Just shouting. And Aboriginal women, here we go, are 35 times more likely to be hospitalised by family violence. The rates are higher in the Indigenous community and the violence is more severe, from what I understand. Do you want to add anything to that? Is there anything that comes... Five times more violence in Indigenous communities. Wow. We need to be loving our Indigenous family a bit better, don't we? Yeah, sobering. So terrorism has killed 118 Australians since 1980. 118 women have died due to family violence in the last 2 years. 1980, 2014, that's the difference. So what are we talking about? What are the types of family violence? Talk to me. How can it manifest? What does it look like? Physical violence, yes. Punching, kicking, hitting, throwing things at. Verbal, yeah, oh, there's more on physical. Burning, restraining, all that sort of stuff. Verbal, so what's that about? Putting down, insulting, yelling at. Yeah?
Surveillance.
Yep. Stalking. Control. Nailed it. That's the core. All of the types of family violence really, is about controlling someone else. Making them do what you want them to do rather than what they want to do. You bet. What other types of violence is there? Emotional? Making people feel bad. You look ugly in that. Oh, gee. You don't look good today. All that kind of stuff. Sorry?
Manipulating.
Yeah. Yeah. Coercive kind of stuff. Yeah. Sexual violence. Potentially the worst kind. Sexual abuse, rape, is physically the most invasive, but it's generally the most damaging kind as well. Yeah. Psychological? Taunting? Torturing? I worked with a guy once who would go away for the weekend on a shooting, hunting trip, and he'd come home to his family and say, I've missed you, but now I'm a better shot. And I kind of went, Like, that's the mix-up of, oh, I've missed you, yay, now I'm a better shot. Isn't that awful? It took me a while to get it, but I thought, no, that's how twisted. Like, he'd planned to say that. You don't just come up with that. He'd planned to say that to his family. Yeah. Yeah, I think they're the main kinds. We've covered it. So this is the power and control wheel, which describes all the different types of violence. So power and control, like we've touched on, that's the core. That's what it's all about. Someone who's being violent is trying to control someone else, have power over them. And then it can take all these different manifestations. So using intimidation, emotional abuse, isolating her. Yeah, we didn't talk about social, actually. Isolating her from her friends and family. Minimizing, denying, blaming, using children, using male privilege, economic abuse, coercion and threats. Physical and sexual violence is on the outside there because that's usually the last step. By the time a couple gets to physical and sexual violence, you pretty well guarantee all the other stuff's already happening. Violence tends to get broader in its manifestations and more severe the longer it goes on for. I would add conversational abuse to men who cut across what their partner is saying or interrupt her or tell her she's wrong or dominate the conversation. Yeah, that's kind of a gender phenomenon anyway. But, she needs to be able to speak. What do you reckon drives this? Why does it happen? Fear, yeah. The person that's using violence is afraid. Yeah. Afraid of losing control. Yeah. Yeah, fueled by alcohol, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Unpredictable, volatile. Generational. Yeah. Dad did it, so it's fine for me as well. Yeah. I think there's three main drivers. We've touched on all of them. One is psychopathology, someone who is not capable of empathy. They don't understand that other people are valuable human beings, so they treat others as objects. The most kind of socially acceptable one, I think, is entitlement, where men feel that they're entitled to treat their partners, wives, children in this way. I'm in charge of you, of course I can tell you what to do. That's really driven by the media too, the way that women are objectified in the media. Just kind of gives men permission. And I think the last driver is just a lack of emotional capability, lack of emotional intelligence, emotional regulation, not understanding that someone else is a human being and you need to make accommodation for them just like they do for you. It can, yeah. It probably underlies it. Lack of emotional intelligence. I think it can be learnt. If it's kind of down the road of psychopathology, it's probably too late to be learnt without kind of serious intervention. Which is why it's important to teach boys about feelings. Yeah, they're related, absolutely. So what would someone who has lived through this kind of violence, what would it be like for them? What's life like? When they've been living it for a long time, what does the person who's experienced that kind of violence become? Yeah, there's a new normal. She probably learns how to navigate it as best she can. Yeah. Yes, can't trust yourself. Been told so many times that you're stupid or dumb or whatever, then you wouldn't feel very confident anymore. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 If something happened previously that he's blown up about, you're going to be super sensitive to making sure that thing's the way it needs to be next time.
Powerless, exactly.
And if the person has trying to been take if the person has trying to been take all the if the person has tried to take all the power in the relationship, then you're left with none. I mean, that's absolutely right. Isn't this an interesting picture? That's what a victim's brain might be full of. Mind games, coercion, humiliation, pressure, control, intimidation. Not a lot of room left for learning and fun and friends and vision. And that's what it's like. People have been suffering for a long time. They're kind of a shell of a person, which is a real shame. No flourishing, absolutely no flourishing. Yeah. Got to be very gentle with people in that state. Very, very gentle indeed. Let's go on to some legal stuff. So here's the Family Law Act of 1975. Family violence is violent, threatening, or other behaviour by a person that coerces or controls a member of the person's family or causes the family member to be fearful. And it includes the stuff we've been talking about: assault, sexual assault, stalking. I worked with a family once where
the partner woman was going to TAFE, and her male partner didn't want her to, and he went on the bus with her to TAFE, and he escorted her to her seat at TAFE, and he sat her down. He walked outside the classroom, and he sat where he could see her, and he watched her while she was at TAFE, and then he walked back to her at her break, and he stood her up, and they went, and she had her morning tea, and he sat her back down, and then he went and watched her again. Unbelievable. He saw nothing wrong with it. He was taking good care of her. Something might happen to her if I'm not there. Who knows what could happen? I'm here to protect her. Yes, I raised with him that that was stalking, and no, it's not. I'm not stalking. I'm looking after her. Intentionally damaging or destroying her property, causing death or injury to animals, loss of autonomy, withholding financial support, preventing her from making or keeping connections with family, friends, or depriving her of her liberty. Interestingly, the Department of Family Services also has in their definition restricting social or restricting spiritual or cultural participation. So I think the church has to really think about that one. Restricting spiritual participation happens a lot in churches for women. And children are particularly vulnerable, which is mentioned there, which is great that they're mentioned in particular. AVOs. There's two types of AVOs, apprehended personal violence order, apprehended domestic violence order. So an ADVO is for someone that you live with, and APVO is for anybody else. If there is an incident at a home that the police are called out to, they will take out an AVO on the protected person's behalf. She has no choice in that. I've been to a number of court cases where she said, I don't want it, he didn't mean it. He's only going to get more angry. But the police are obligated to take out an AVO. So that's what they look like. Here's the original if you're interested. It's got the names and stuff blacked out. The top of this page... Oh, sorry about the quality. So the standard order's there. The defendant must not assault, molest, harass, etc., threaten, stalk. That's all the stuff that's illegal anyway. So an AVO just spells out, this is illegal, you're not allowed to do it, don't do it. And then the additional orders, the next bit, which is blank on this one had no additional orders, that's where they might spell out any special conditions for that situation. You know, when they change over the kids, he has to drop them at the front of the property and not go in, or they have to change over at Blacktown Macca's, or Saturday afternoons at Blacktown Macca's, there's so many police escorts and kids get out of one car and into another car and the police go, good, it's quite funny. AVOs last for about 2 years, usually. She needs to report if he breaches. If he does any of those things, she needs to report to the police so they've got a record of what he's done. And the penalties are harsher if an AVO is breached than if there wasn't an AVO in place. So an AVO is not a criminal conviction in and of itself, but once one is in place, it just says, you need to be aware that this behaviour is not okay. And if he breaches, then penalties are more severe. Yeah, we'll get there. I'll try and get there before the end. Will you remind me if I don't? I'm going to try. Yeah, good. We're going to understand violence before we can know what we're going to do about it. This is the cycle of violence. So starting up at the top, you stupid fool, he gets angry. He'll hit her, pow. It happens with other types of violence as well, but this is a physical illustration. He says, you shouldn't have pushed me. It was your fault. Notice he's blaming her for him hitting her. Honey, it will never happen again, I promise. He's very repentant. Then they kind of go into a honeymoon phase. See, honey, we haven't got any problems. And then she's getting on my nerves again, and the cycle goes round and round. The longer a couple are living in a violent situation, the faster the cycle gets and the more severe the violence gets. The one at the bottom, honey, it will never happen again, is really attractive to Christians. We love that bit. We love when there's an incident and he's genuinely sorry, and most of the time he's genuinely sorry because he's sorry he got caught. We love that. We're like, great, he's repented. You guys can stay together. This is super wonderful. But we know that's part of the cycle. It's not a violent incident
and then it gets better, and then there's another violent incident. Like, the cycle is the violence. That's part of her life going, it's okay, it's not okay, it's okay, it's not okay, it's okay. That volatility is violent in and of itself. Here's another diagram of a similar thing, but it's 180 degrees around, if that makes sense. Don't look for the same thing in the same place. Which kind of describes how she's feeling as well. So if we start at the explosive fight on the left, she feels pain and fear. He makes excuses, he minimises, blames her, if only she hadn't have done X, Y, Z to provoke me. If you hear that enough times, she'll kind of go, oh, maybe it was my fault. So she blames herself. Then there's that honeymoon phase. We love that bit. He says he's sorry. He says he loves her. She says, that's okay, I forgive you. They say it's never going to happen again. She's hopeful. She feels loves. And the tension builds up and we go around again. So if you're working with, walking alongside or working with people who are experiencing violence, know there's the cycle. You can even say to her, what part of the cycle are you up to? She'll know. What's happening today? Are you in a honeymoon phase now? Be aware that that's how it works. Check out this picture. What do you reckon? Talk to me. What does it evoke for you? Yeah. Yeah. Violent situation could be. She's still clinging. Yeah. A dance. Yeah. Oh, death. Death. Yeah. Clinging onto death. Yeah, huge imbalance. Yeah. Yeah. Shifts our focus of who the victim is a bit, doesn't it? I don't know, is it? You tell me, I just like the picture. Yeah, right. Ah. I'm new. Thanks for teaching us. Death and the Maiden. Yeah, right. There's lots of wisdom in the room. Why does she stay? Does this picture kind of fill out a bit? Why does she stay? Because she's in the relationship too. She might love him. They might have a house together. He might financially provide for her. Yeah. She probably loves him. She just hates the violence. If the violence stopped, it'd probably be okay. Yeah.
Well, being the skeleton, what he once was.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe.
Currently is.
Yeah. Ooh. I didn't do art history, I don't know. Yeah. 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 Could be habit, holding on to him. Yeah. Churches. The stats for churches. It happens. You bet it happens. I have a friend who used to be married to an Anglican minister. He would drag her around the house by her hair. It happens. In 2006, a Church of England survey found that the rates of DV within churches was the same as the wider community. A Methodist study in 2002 got the same result. One study more recently found lower rates of violence amongst regular church attenders, with higher rates of violence amongst occasional church attenders. I suspect that might be because people who would use violence who come to church occasionally might just take on the parts of church that they want to. We go at Christmas, we go at Easter, men are in charge, you know, they're not really going to be shaped by the gospel. But more regular church attenders, I think that sounds about right to me, would have slightly lower rates of DV than amongst the general public. The Centre for Public Christianity has called for an independent study. To my knowledge, that hasn't happened yet. There's a couple of DV questions that are being asked in the National Church Life Survey, which is coming out in a few months, but they're only asking the leaders two questions, which isn't going to tell us very much. Those questions are, of the following responses, which have you used when dealing with domestic and family violence situations? And how familiar are you with support services available in your local community? So it doesn't ask victims anything. Yeah, right. And what's going to happen with the data?
There's a working group, so I think it's just a working group just to get some data from the college, just to see what's happening.
Yep.
So I think it's just a collection of data, and I guess we'll work out what to do next.
Is that the one Sandy Grant's involved in?
Might be.
Yes. It is, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's going to be, it's going to be good data to have. We don't have much data at all. I want to hear from the victims. I think 7% of victims said they'd feel comfortable talking to their minister in another survey I've heard. I wouldn't talk to my minister. He's a bloke. So we'll get the minister's perspective from that survey, but that's not who I want to hear from. I mean, I like you and all, but what does God want for families? All this beautiful stuff. Yeah. That's a very good question. The best paper to read is Patriarchy and Domestic Violence by Stephen Tracy. He does the best lit review I've seen. So those data's from in here. Do you want to have a look at that? The reference, Patriarchy and Domestic Violence by Stephen R. Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y. Journal of Evangelical Theological Society, that's not right, something like that. Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society. Great article, publicly available. Someone can have that copy if they want. He's got most of it in there. So what does God want for families? Love, peace, kindness, gentleness, self-control. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, consider others above yourself. As God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Gosh, it sounds different, doesn't it? Since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. There is no fear in love. In the image of God, he created the male and female. Husbands and wives, submit to one another. Husbands are to love their wives and be considerate and respectful. God opposes the proud. Do not envy the violent or choose any of their ways. So I think that's pretty clear. As Christians, we need to have a deep commitment to non-violence. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, you're right. There's probably 100 verses we could have talked about but didn't. Yeah, you're right. Thank you. And we're to live at peace with others as far as it depends on us. Surprise, surprise, the secular world is slowly picking up on what God has been telling us for a long time. And that kind of, well, those kinds of sentiments in the Bible have been picked up by social workers who have put together the equality wheel, which is the opposite of the power and violence wheel. So this is what the secular world is looking for in an equal relationship of non-violence. Negotiation and fairness, non-threatening behaviour, respect, trust and support, honesty and accountability, responsible parenting, shared responsibility, economic partnership. Any comments on that? Any discussion?
I like that, and I feel like we need educational bits.
Yeah. lovely, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Google the equality wheel. You'll get a million hits. It's lovely to spell it. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Quite the subversion of God's word, I should think. Which raises the question, are churches being violent? Probably some are. Well, some are. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Big question. Authority doesn't necessarily imply control, but power tends to corrupt, so someone's certainly at risk if they're in a position of authority, of controlling others. Yeah. Do we upset you, Jeff? Isn't it just beautiful? Like, I love what you said. I just love dwelling in these words. Social workers are really good at these kind of ways of speaking. I love the way they talk about mutual respect and shared responsibility, non-threatening, trust and support. Because I think we need to know what love is not in violent situations as well as what it is. So look and build, look for and build these things. Absolutely. Good questions to be asking. There was that ad on TV I was pleased to see. I saw it about a month ago where a young boy slams a door in a young girl's face. And how does it work out? He's asked to... How does it end? I can't remember. Yeah, right. So those behaviours started early. And the boy was kind of allowed to get away with it as a young boy. Yeah, and she was kind of taught to accept it. Oh, there's that intertwining of love and pain. Yeah. He hurts you because he likes you. Policies that actually are
what do you make of that forgiveness verse? Tell us about what you think about that. Feel more violence, yeah.
Yeah, but the church has got to be a leader. It's got to stand up for people. You know, the union movement in Britain came out of the church. It came out of the Methodist church. It didn't come out of Karl Marx. It came out of the church.
Yep.
And the unions are there to protect the worker.
Yep.
Now, if you get three workers together, and the government will tell you they're communists. If you've got three workers together, an association, they're communists.
We're going to get onto some of the stuff the church can do, so we'll be glad to hear from you again about what you think we should be doing.
Jesus was a social reformer.
Yeah.
He wasn't a guy that, he lived with the ordinary people, the downtrodden, and he went out and fought for those people.
Yeah.
He didn't sit back while, you know, you did this or you did that, or criticise. He was out there, he turned over the papers in the church.
And the church should be a refuge for people who are suffering.
Oh, yeah, sanctuary.
Rather than perpetrating. Absolutely. Great idea. Yeah.
Well, you want input, is it? It's like a workshop, isn't it?
No, it's great. I appreciate it. Go ahead. Yeah.
To be violent.
Absolutely.
It's social conditions.
Yeah.
That's why they're violent. And it is, the church is giving it that way. Yeah. And it was generational. And I guess the way that we look at it is that it's not just the woman. It's not an individual issue, it's their issue.
Yeah. Look at the broader community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Yep. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful way to look at it. She's so much more supported too if she's looked at it, viewed as part of a wider family. Yeah. Part of the damage of violence is isolating her from all those things. So that's, I mean, it's a great way to combat is to keep her in community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think it's worth. Yeah. And what a great reminder for us to just keep in touch with someone that we think might be suffering violence. Just stay in touch. Be available if she needs you. Yeah.
super interesting question. Having a leader doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be abused, but you're at greater risk. Leaders have more power over you. That's the thing, they can use it for good or for evil. The reactions that I've had from churches, well, I only speak to churches that are receptive. The article that I wrote recently on the relationship between complementarianism and family violence, because both have the shared dynamic of men in control of women, was received pretty well. I think most people understand that there can be a risk of abuse in churches. I think most people are there. Not everyone understands that there is danger in churches and that it happens. Most complementarians will say, we understand that women are at risk of abuse, but we're kind and loving and thoughtful, so that doesn't happen here. To which I say, it can, you just don't know about it. I think. Yeah, come back. I mean, there's lots of discussion about that at the moment. I think the movement's growing, but I actually think camps are kind of becoming more polarised too. But the issue of abuse, I think complementarian churches can't ignore it anymore. We've just kind of got to the tipping point just recently where they can't ignore it anymore. But what they do with it is the next question. I think it's possible to have a complementarian church that's not abusive, but it's risky. I wouldn't do it, but it's not impossible. I haven't answered your question very well. Well, complementarians say that men and women are equal in personhood and dignity, but that men and women have different roles. So they would affirm equality. They do affirm equality. They would distinguish equality from sameness. My next question then is, if men have a more obvious public ministry, isn't that a male-centric church, which is not caring for the women? And no one's really sufficiently answered that apart from saying, no, we do care for the women. And I go, no, you don't. I think the problem is in accountability too, because in churches where there's exclusively male leadership, they're accountable to other males who have equal privilege. And I don't think that works. You've got to be accountable to people who have varying levels of privilege to you. Great question. Keep asking it. Absolutely. And complementarians would argue that men and women are different by design, to which I would say, well, where's our representation? If we're different by design, then you can't speak for us. Yeah. Great questions. Love it, love it, love it. My friend, Tony Jessup, painted this painting. She calls it deep listening, and I bought it as quickly as I possibly could. What do you see in that picture? Yeah. Yep. Paying attention to each other. Same level. Yep.
What else? They're not too intertwined. Yeah. Leaning in, yeah. They both want to be there. Isn't it lovely? It's blue and pink too. So, I'm proposing a spectrum from violence to mutual love and respect. We need to acknowledge that we're all sinful people and we have all sinned against each other from time to time. We have all hurt each other. That's not the same as violence, but there's a bit of a shared element. No one's perfect. No one has never harmed another person. But when we talk about violence, we talk about an ongoing pattern. It's repeated. It's deliberate. It grows. Trying to control another person. That's distinct from, I was really stressed that day, I'm sorry, I raised my voice, I apologise, and it only happens the once. Does that, that's easy enough, yeah? So, on this spectrum, we can place something, but I think there's also an orientation. So you can have someone who has been in a violent relationship who would be down the violent end, but if they've got an orientation towards mutual love and respect, and they're seeking to move that way, then that's different from someone who's stuck in violence. Does that make sense? And similarly, you could have someone who has been really great, mutual love and respect, but something's happened and then they're moving or facing that way. So let's shout out some topics and I'll start us off, and then let's just talk about where they might sit. So the issue of control down the violent end, got to make sure I get my sides right, this is controlling the other person, seeking to control someone else. Down that end is probably self-control. If we were to put harm up there, we would put harming another person, or up this end we would put healing someone who has been harmed or helping someone who's been harmed. Does that kind of make sense? We're just putting stuff up there. So how about blame? Tell me about blame. Super. Might not even be blame, might be taking responsibility. Taking responsibility, shirking responsibility maybe. Yeah. How about decision making? Making decisions for, making decisions with. Yeah. Freedom. Sorry? Yeah, restricting freedom, imprisoning, granting freedom, absolutely, liberating. What else? What else do you want to talk about? It is. Yeah, well said. It's very complex. I would put, I keep getting mixed up, forced submission down that end and willing and mutual submission up that end. Something like that.
There's a real clash there, isn't there, between turn the other cheek. I don't know what to do with that, because you don't want to put yourself in harm's way, and we shouldn't be telling anyone to put themselves in harm's way. So what do you think turn the other cheek's talking about? What does it mean? Yeah. It certainly means don't slap back. We know it means that much. Do some self-defense in a bit, we can experiment. Where does the church stand? Where should the church stand? Is that the question of the night? What's the church going to do about this? Form of violence, you bet it is. I'm really sorry that happened to you. I wonder if an ongoing violent relationship is not a marriage anymore. And I think the church needs to recognise that the people in a marriage are more important than the institution of marriage. And safety is really important. If she's going to be dead soon, then that's more important than keeping the marriage together. Because marriage is going to end as soon as she dies anyway.
And that's the logical end. Yeah, enough time you might have been. Yeah. Kind of dead inside. So I think at the point down this end of violence, you're talking about safety. I suppose the question at that point is, she should leave. Most people say that she should leave. I think he should leave. And she should stay with the kids, because that's less disruptive. I think separation within Christian marriages, who it might be about here, down this end it's too far gone. We're talking jail, we're talking significant trauma that's going to take a long time to overcome. That's kind of really criminal down there. I think that's for the police to deal with. The church should walk with people, but that's a police issue. A little bit further this way, I think there's merit in separation for a time. When it's no longer a marriage, and that kind of brain state that we talked about before, that one, you can't do well in a marriage when you're in that state. You just can't. So I think separation for a time has merit, with the view to becoming well and reconciling in time. That's a long road. I would want lots of accountability for him, lots of support for her, and that's really got to be tailored to the individual situation. I can't speak to what that looks like, really, because you'd need lots of people involved and a strong case plan and lots of accountability. Absolutely. It doesn't really work, does it? Like,
not really.
That's why I think he should leave. He should leave and keep paying for everything. It doesn't happen, but...
He may not do that.
He probably won't do that. I know lots of those stories. What would you want to see? Safety and recovery is step one, and that might take years. Yep. Become well, have the kids feel safe, have lots of people keeping him accountable. You might even have to do supervised visits, that kind of stuff.
Churches sometimes have this understanding of the relationship problem. Violence problem. So
yes. Life. 90% of the referrals that I get for couples counselling, they think they're coming for couples counselling, or someone, often a minister, has told them to come for couples counselling, is family violence. The problem in the relationship is that she won't do what she's told. It's crazy. Yeah.
And unless that's happening spontaneously,
Yeah. And I hear an element of responsibility in there, where with mutual love and respect, both are responsible working in partnership. Down the violent end, the thing that happens in violence is if you, in a family of violence, if you make a list of things that each partner is responsible for, she is responsible for everything. She's responsible for cooking and cleaning and looking after the kids and keeping him happy and sleeping with him when he wants to and doing this and that so he's not going to get set off and keeping the caseworker happy and da-da-da-da-da-da. She's responsible for everything and he's responsible for nothing. And then when a social worker comes along and says to her, so, you need to leave, we're just putting more responsibility on her, telling her she needs to do more and more and more. So the question, why doesn't she leave, maybe, but I think a more valid question is, why doesn't he relate with respect? Let's place responsibility where it's due. So That's why I didn't put mutual down the violent end, because it's not. It's usually very one-sided. And there should be a lot in between, shouldn't there? There should be accountability partners and really open, honest conversations. You know, saying to each other, have you shouted at your wife this week? And then asking her the same question and seeing if you get the same answer. There should be a lot in the middle. We don't support each other enough in marriage. That's a really good thought. I don't know who that person should be. I mean, I don't know. What do churches do? I mean, this is a great start here, discussing and being more informed and learning from each other.
Can I say 30 seconds on the turn the other cheek and it may lead into what
churches? Yes.
So, danger of speaking or anything, but the part that I think we often get that's sort of been talked about is the resisting getting into that cycle of violence. So that's part of it, you know. We don't make violence with violence.
Yeah.
That's kind of obvious. But I think it's important to say tonight, there's a part of those sayings that are also unmasking the violence. That's part of what turning the other cheek is. It's more clear with the, if they want to take the cloak, give you tunic as well. So the person will be naked, and that's a shame on those who's taking the clothes. Normally as a payment for a loan, you've actually put someone in the situation of being naked. That brings shame on the person who's taking the thing.
Yep.
So that's part of it we're not very good at. Some of us, maybe the church too much has emphasised the non-violence as a response, yes, but actually in a way that unmasks the violence the perpetrator is really involved.
Yep.
And I don't think we've got many clues actually about how to do that effectively.
Yep.
And so that's,
Unmasking the violence.
Unmasking the violence is part of what Jesus was talking about in those sayings. And we often miss that, and we often don't do it as a church.
Yeah.
It's resistance, that's right. It's not pacifism. It's non-violent resistance.
Yeah.
And that takes incredible strength and takes community. You can't ask a person, an individual who's suffering violence to do that alone.
Yeah.
You know, that's the lesson from the civil rights movement and others. Take strong communities to unmask the violence. And so we need to be a strong community for people suffering from the violence. That's part of the answer, I think. And yeah, anyway, I've had my 30 seconds.
Good 30 seconds. You can, I mean, you can work with a really good counsellor and do that sort of stuff. So you can recognise where you're up to in the cycle, both sit down and talk with a counsellor about what you're going to do when you get to this point. You're going to go stay with your brother for 2 days and then you're going to check in with this person. And you can put together a case plan for it, like it's possible to overcome. But everyone needs to be on board. Usually the worst perpetrators aren't on board. So when to stay and when to go, I'd just be looking for, does he recognise the problem and is he wanting to work with you? If the answer is no and no, then I don't have as much hope as when it's yes and yes. Self-absorbed, yeah. Here's some thoughts I had. I'm sure the wisdom of the room will have some more. So what can the church do? Accept that it happens, and it happens within the church. Keep loving, being kind and gentle. Keep respecting women, or start respecting women. Keep telling everyone they're worth the blood of Jesus and nothing less. Preach regularly on how families love one another and include what's not okay. I love this quote from David Morrison, who's Australian Army Chief. The standard you walk past is the standard you accept. That kind of silent permission idea, where if you know it's happening and you're not doing anything, you're giving it permission if you don't stand up against it. Have visible women at your church to address the power imbalance. And I think, Jess, you might have talked about this before, run conflict resolution, anger management and marriage and enrichment preparation courses. Keep the dialogue going about what healthy relationship is. Keep it running. Make it a part of the culture of your church. This is what healthy relationships do. There's two really good courses for teenagers. Oh, Love Bites is one of them, and I can't remember the name of the other one. And it's been revolutionary for some of the young kids I've worked with. Like, some of the boys didn't realise that women are worthy of respect. They just didn't know. It was news to them. And I thought, well, no wonder violence happens, like, if you've never been given that message. So the church just needs to be a vehicle of perpetuating the conversation of mutual love and respect. Keep each other accountable for your behaviour. Ask the hard questions. One of the things that... I don't know if it was Miles Hill, I'm reluctant to say that, was their eldership. Every meeting, when their elders would meet, they would ask each other 10 questions, and they were really invasive questions, and one of them was, have you loved and cared for your wife this week? How have you done that? Have you been harsh with your wife this week? How have you done that? I think we need more of that, especially for people in areas of responsibility. If someone has authority over a church, then they need to be held responsible to an equal level. You know, like, we need to be able to ask those questions of people. Have a designated safe house or safe person at your church and advertise it really regularly so that that information is available to anyone who wants it. Be prepared to walk a long road with survivors and people who use violence. And connect with a refuge and a local counsellor so that you can refer to them and they can refer people to you. If you're a safe church to come to, then people can come. What other ideas have you got? Great idea. Great idea. Yep. Yep. I think it'd be important to point that person to the right place. You wouldn't want to point them to the wrong person or place. So make sure you've got, like, a designated person at your church and you're sending them to a good service. Yeah, both. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, have it as a running item in your news sheet. Yeah. It's community service. And I've just been thinking local church, but yeah, other ideas. Yeah. Preach, Faye. Preach. Yep. What other ideas have you got?
Is worth trying to deliberately make this more than a domestic violence issue? I'm just concerned that obviously when we see examples of domestic violence, whether it's physical harm or serious abuse, we want to focus on that. But
wouldn't it be lovely if churches were super proactive about running healthy families courses and recovery groups? I'm struggling with alcoholism, I'm struggling with this, I'm struggling with that. We're all in recovery from something or other. And just make it kind of a normal part of the conversation. Both the negative stuff, we're recovering from this, but also the positive, we're trying to build a really healthy community here. Yeah, it'd be great. To family, yeah, I kind of use them interchangeably, yeah.
To say, you put violence on one hand and the other, the opposite, as it were, a mutually caring relationship.
Yep.
And I think that's no reciprocation. I think they're not on the same division. I think the opposite of a mutually caring relationship is a totally failed relationship. And a relationship can fail without sending it to domestic violence.
You're right.
And the opposite of violence isn't a mutually caring relationship. The opposite of violence is successful confrontation. How there was a fascinating
Yeah, they're not bothered.
They just go, that's the way, and they're not non-caring, they're very horrible, stupid.
Yeah. It's a gross oversimplification. Granted, absolutely. Yeah, conflict resolution. You can disagree with someone peacefully. Absolutely, we think that disagreement is the same as conflict, but it's not. You can absolutely disagree with someone in the most peaceful, kind, gentle way. The problem is the angst and the antagonism. That's the violent bit. Oh, that's a gross oversimplification. You're quite right. Absolutely. Well, you can be angry. You have to be angry at someone. Yeah. Yeah, anger's not a sin. Yeah. What else can the church do? I think the idea of the, my young daughter too, I always make sure when you say stop, they need to stop. And I'm thinking of when she's about to be raped, when she's whatever, it starts in the sandpit. If they say stop, you stop. In the schoolyard, jokes like that aren't funny. Like, what a great way for Christians to stand apart from their mates at school. Actually, guys, I don't think that's appropriate. We need to respect our women. What would your sister, what would your mum say about that? Let's not joke like that.
Selected, how they get trained, how they get formed, how we keep each other accountable, but not in a tough way.
Yeah.
There needs to be a toughness, but not a violence. Sort of. And there's often inherent or implicit violence when male Christian leaders talk about getting tough on stuff. Intense there, but it's all that stuff that sort of communicates. And I can only imagine what it's like.
in a situation of violence at home, and you've got a minister up front talking tough about something, what that sounds and feels like I've just almost got enough imagination to imagine what that's like. And so, you know, it's, even how we address this, we've got to be careful, I think.
Yeah.
Or we just sort of compound or make it worse.
Yeah. We've got to do it respectfully. It saddens me and angers me when feminists are violent towards perpetrators. I think you're doing the same thing, just taking the moral high ground while you do it. Deep commitment to non-violence. We have to be respectful while we deal with this issue, otherwise we're just replicating the dynamics. If we come in tough on perpetrators and want to punish them, we're just replicating the dynamics. Yeah. Do you want to do some self-defense? You can say no.
Sup sounds good.
Yes, no, maybe. It's easy. Do you want to? Who wants to? You don't have to do it. I can just show you if you like. All right. It's easy. It's not scary stuff. Volunteer. Someone come up. I'm not going to hurt you. Not going to hurt you. So I'll teach you two things, and this isn't like, we're not going to be ninjas in 5 minutes, but I'll just teach you two things, have a go at them if you like. It's just to give you an experience of what physical violence might be like. It's not very scary. He's got the camera, Jeff. Let's pose.
This is going to be one of those, he ends up on YouTube, isn't it?
This is beginner stuff. It's not scary. So don't do it if you don't want to, but it's interesting to have a go at. So we're just going to try and get out of a grab. So if someone's trying to grab you, drag you off somewhere, hurt you, give you a lecture. So Jeff, just practice the grab there. You want to go the way that their thumb is. That's the weakest point. So you want to try and pull your arm out that way. Don't punch yourself in the face while you do it. I've done that. It hurts. So just remember the direction of the thumb. So grab hard. We're just going to try and pull that way. If it doesn't work, if he's stronger than you, which happens to me most of the time, we're going to hit on there at the same time. Okay? You know that funny little nervy thingo there that makes your hand go funny? Go for that.
You want to see?
We can face different directions.
I'm about to get my butt kicked.
No, you're really not, and my belt's not cooperating either. But at the time, if you can't just pull straight out, just hit on there at the same time. Yeah? Yeah? Do the open body so they can see. Yeah. So if you can't just pull out, you want to go the direction of the thumb. Don't bother going that way. You're not going to get out. Go the direction of the thumb. If you can't pull out, hit on the wrist. Yeah? Do you want to have a go?
Yeah.
Wardrobe malfunction. Don't do it up the front. Just grab a partner where you are.
She's
gonna. Do you want to? So you want to go the direction of the thumb, so your arm's going to go out that way. Mm-hmm. Just have a go of pulling that way. Working? Not working? Not working. Get him there at the same time, and then pull your arm out. Same time. Yeah.
I hit myself.
Nice. Do you want to have a crack with someone next to you? It's interesting just to have a physical experience of what to do, of feeling controlled. When someone's got you, it can be really tight. That's it. So if you can't just pull out, and usually you can't just... Grab a fist for me. One more. Come back, Jeff. Yeah. So just do one, just pulling out. Yeah. But if you can't pull out, yeah, watch. That's it.
Got it. So that
thing makes your hand go, oh, makes hand go Gumby. All right, one more. Come back, Jeff.
This is a way to kind of block something coming at your head. Flip him over. Got some crash mats, I might. So this is something, if someone's coming to grab your head or punch your head or grab your hair and drag you off somewhere. And this is actually a really interesting example of meeting violence with non-violence, because we're not going to punch back, we're just going to just cut the violence. None of that. So if, Jeff, you do this to me as slowly as that, with that arm, so we're open to the audience seeing, just going to block it across. Yeah? So go again. And my body's in a circle, so I'm not trying to stop it. I'm just moving in a circle. And my arm isn't doing the work. My body's doing the work. My arm's staying the same in relation to my body. Yeah? Go again. Go again. So just blocking it off, yeah? So I'm moving in a circle. You know those drums in the Karate Kid? How you twist the drum and the little swings on the drum go... It's a circle. It's all about karate. It's all about the circle.
Wax on, wax off.
Self-defense with weapons is quite different, but there's this rad trick I learned. I love it. Let's see if I can make it work. Hold a knife, Jeff. So here's when people are wielding a weapon, their mind is on the weapon. They're not thinking about you so much as I've got a weapon, I'm so tough, which makes them more vulnerable in other places. So I'd be going for this sort of stuff. But I would, there's also another trick where you can use the same nervy thing down here. And if you hit two places at once, you can kind of get them to drop it. Oh, it didn't work. Which is dangerous if there's a knife this close to your face. Oh, let's see if it works. Yeah, it's not going to work. With a knife, if someone's holding it like that, they're not very skilled with it. People who are skilled with knives hold them like this. If someone's holding a knife like this, run like there's no tomorrow. If someone's holding a knife like this, go for somewhere else on their body. So if Jeff was coming at me like that, I would literally just go down here, go anywhere but the knife. I would run like there's no tomorrow. I'd go, that's not a knife. You very rarely just get to that situation, though. There's usually a bit of a fight in the pub, or this is your partner and they've done it before and you know not to be alone, or, you know, self-defense is really quite artificial. The key is fight. In all studies that have looked at whether women have survived or not survived, the key is fight. Attackers will want a victim who's just going to be carried away, not cause a fuss. They just want a no-drama kind of victim. Fight like there's no tomorrow. Kick, scream, make it difficult. My old sensei, I learned karate, and my old sensei, he was an ex-SAS paratrooper. The guy was an absolute ninja. He could do push-ups on his thumbs. He said, girls, if anyone is trying to rape you, murder you, don't muck around, just pop their eyes out. And I went, oh. But it's true. Like, if you're going to end up dead, then do what you have to do, right? Just... Yeah, yeah.
Except I spent steps on, I see my husband teaching him how to be very assertive and aggressive and defend himself.
You've got to work for it. We're taught to not be like that. You've got to push through. You've got to work for it. So I've been training in karate for about 10 years, and it's hard. And I cry a lot because the guys are big and mean and scary, and they just are, and they don't get it, and it's scary. But I want to be able to protect me and my kids, because the world's not going to. And if my husband's not there, then it's my job. My husband's bigger than me, and he's not as good at karate as I am, and he can still beat me. So I've got to be a lot better at self-defense to just be equal with him, which sucks, but there it is. How we doing? Questions, comments, thoughts? Are we over time? Supper sounds good, yeah? Oh, I've got to show you this one. So this is Christian self-defense. So the attacker goes, bless you, brother.
And then the defendant goes, "Glory to the Lord in the heavens. Bow to the Lord." Isn't that great? I googled, I think it was Christian self-defense, and that came up, and I quite liked it. Here's some resources if you need anything. They're all great. I'll leave that up. I'll be hanging around for a while. I'm happy to answer more questions. Yeah. It would depend. So if you're in a situation with raised adrenaline where person's in, where the attacker is in a survival caveman kind of mode, empathy's not going to work. There's no blood going to that part of the brain at that time. Empathy kicks in 5 or 10 minutes later. It's the difference between danger and risk. So when you're in a dangerous situation, you've just got to survive. The empathy would come later. When I said about fight, that's if you're going to be dragged off and murdered. That's not in a particularly in a DV situation. I don't think I've answered your question. I remember a scene from Grey's Anatomy, you know, the one with the shooter in the hospital. And he was about to shoot someone, and she said, "My name's this, and I live here, and my parents' name is this, and my dog's name is this." There is data to say if the attacker understands you as a person, they're less likely to attack you rather than if you're just kind of a faceless, nameless thing in their way. So that makes sense too. I don't think I've answered your question. No, very different. Yeah, that's right. We might leave it there.
Hi.
I'll be hanging around. I'm happy to answer questions afterwards.
Please join me in thanking Kylie for...
Oh, you're so nice. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. As we say about, if you please don't go home feeling like a mess. If you need to talk to someone, please do so. There'll be tea and coffee, and just get some stuff available in the courtyard. Just like to let you know also about our next peace talk on the 10th of September. It will be a poetry night. We're very blessed to have, as our children and family worker, the National Slam Poetry Champion at our church, and he's going to be putting on a bit of a slam poetry showcase for us. So if that's your kind of thing, or you know people that are, please come along, and there's flyers available at that thing there. Thanks everyone for coming, and I'll see you at the next one.